Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
There's something wrong. You don't know what it is, but it's there. Like a splinter in your mind. You have to see it for yourself. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes.
Matrix on a Saturday night. Really, really pumped up about this show. Got an awesome guest tonight, Andrew Paulson. Alexander Paulson. He's a brilliant engineer, physics, Cal Berkeley engineering graduate, and he's going to be joining us tonight. We're going to be talking about the technology of the NWO, the New World Order. That's going to be tonight's topic, and I'm really excited. Sure, we're going to get into some of my favorite X-Files stuff. Scalar energy, HARP, weather modification, geoengineering. Going to get into all that good stuff tonight. Maybe EMP, ELF, technology there. I'm really want to probe my friend's mind. Him and his partner, great inventor. They have a water purification system that they develop. Dump it in sewage water, it'll filter it out. Drinkable water. It was 1/20th of the cost of what GE operated in, like 2 to 3 times more efficient. And of course, instead of our military spending $130,000 on them. Machine that's smaller, more compact, more energy efficient, and 2 to 3 times more effective filtering for $130,000 a unit, GE, magically enough, gets the bid at $3 million a unit. That's our tax dollars and our networking going to work. One of my favorite big companies, GE, doesn't pay any taxes, super profitable company, and in the gangster's pockets and big corporation in the government's pocket. Again, it just blew my mind when he was talking about that on a Gorilla Radio show a few days back. It was just mind-boggling. Let me see. I think that's my friend right there now. Let me bring him on in.
Hello, Austin. Good evening.
Good evening, my friend. Is this my good friend, Mr. Paulson?
Guilty as charged.
Guilty as charged. I'm so excited to have you on. I mean, this is my show, Unraveling the Matrix. We get it, a little bit more technical here than on the Gorilla Radio. And when I heard your information and your knowledge of scalar technology and geoengineering and all that good stuff, you piqued my interest. I definitely wanted to have you on the show discussing it.
Well, I'll try not to disappoint you. I'm far from being the big expert in it, but I have studied for a number of years. But we'll do what we can. We'll see if we can address your issues and see if we can educate the listeners a little bit and maybe pique some interest, get some further reading going.
That's what I'm talking about, my friend. I'm going to put out the call-out numbers. You can call in, of course, at 347-324-3704. Call in, hit 1, put your hand up. And you know, I mean, the more the merrier. When I have someone educated that knows their stuff like you, I like to just put it out there and, you know, have some callers give you, you know, ask you some questions. Let's have some fun with this.
Well, yeah, I'm all riled up right now, actually. I just came from dinner, and I got in a conversation at this restaurant with somebody who was, we're talking about 9/11, and he hit one of my big hot buttons.
What would your hot button be on 9/11?
Well, I've got several, actually. The one he hit was the old saw about the World Trade Center's jet fuel burns at 1,800 degrees, and 1,800 degrees is enough to melt the steel, so therefore, you know, that all happened. That is the most ignorant story probably of, I don't know, maybe not the most ignorant part of the official story, but certainly high on the list.
You mean the mere fact that jet fuel temperature at its highest point of burning, the highest temperature it had, is only 1,237 degrees Fahrenheit below what it takes to melt steel. Is that the physics we're talking about here?
Well, not all of the physics. I mean, because the actual temperature at which the jet fuel burns, it is relevant, but it's not the most relevant factor of the equation. Okay, because what you're talking about is a heat transfer situation. Okay, you've got some burning material, some fuel source, jet fuel, whatever it is. You know, they always use the word jet fuel. Oh man, jet fuel, jet fuel. I mean, just think about what that does. I mean, you know, it takes a 747, 7 miles in the air, 600 miles an hour, carrying 430 people, you know, halfway around the world. Jet fuel. I mean, we're talking massive energy here, right? Well, what you're really talking about is kerosene. That doesn't sound quite so threatening when you talk about it that way, right?
Right.
But the temperature of it is really not all relevant. And I'm going to give you an example that pretty much everybody can relate to. You ever cooked on a gas range?
Absolutely.
You ever fried an egg on a gas stove? Well, I don't think that's possible. How is that possible? I mean, propane burns at, what, 3,000, 3,400 degrees, and aluminum melts at 1,800 degrees? That should be impossible. Your aluminum pan should disintegrate instantly as soon as you turn the gas on, right? Well, it doesn't. And the reason it doesn't is because it's not the temperature where the temperature is relevant, but it's not the most important factor. You know, anytime you're trying to transfer heat from something that's hotter to colder, you have a lot of variables, and these variables can get pretty complicated. And essentially what you're doing when you heat something up, you're transferring heat. Heat is not measured by degrees. It's measured by BTUs. And,
right.
And you have to – I mean, if temperature was – if all that was measured by heat, you can go up to a building with a big lighter, you know, which burns at 3,200 degrees, and then just find yourself an exposed girder sometime and knock the building down with your by flicking your bit. I know everybody knows that's ridiculous. Well, I mean, the jet fuel thing is just as ridiculous if you really understand the physics. It's just as crazy as that because you don't have enough heat. The heat would have expended long, long, long before the steel ever would have reached any kind of a temperature because steel does something a lot of metals do. It conducts heat. Right?
Well, yeah.
So not only do you have a factor of you're putting heat into the steel, but the heat is coming out of the steel almost just as fast.
Well, steel's actually a great conductor, so it would disperse those BTUs of heat quite efficiently in reality, wouldn't it?
Yeah, actually, I sat down and tried to figure out how many BTUs it would take to heat the buildings hot enough to soften the steel. And I think even – I actually said, okay, well, let's assume – the airplanes had a full load of fuel, and let's assume none of it burned up in the fireball. Let's just assume that was just a big optical effect, right? Let's assume all of the fuel, the jet fuel, you know, burned and got hot and got onto the girders and all that. I think I was somewhere around 2% of the necessary BTUs to even raise the temperature enough of the steel to cause any kind of a transition up the stress strain curve of steel.
So you're saying for, I mean, with the physics of this, you'd have to have 50 airplanes hit the exact same point.
Well, and then you would have to have perfect heat transfer between the flames and the steel, which, of course, you're not going to have because you don't have – I mean, it was a steel skeleton, all right? So, I mean, if
right.
you had 2% of the exposed surface area steel, you've got to make that adjustment for that amount of exposed surface area because most of the heat is going to go into something other than the steel. I mean, what you have is an impossible situation. I mean, it's just physically impossible. The math doesn't work. There's no way to make it work. There's just no way to make this work within the known laws of physics. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
Anyway,
well,
one of my hot buttons on 9/11. For what
But you're saying it's a hot button, but it's not near hot enough.
not hot enough. No, the one that really amuses me is the Pentagon. Is the Pentagon. Okay. You look at the pictures of the Pentagon before the facade collapsed, and you've got this neat little tiny hole, all right, and you say, well, let me superimpose a jet over that hole. And,
right.
All right, well, the jet's got these big wings, and he's got these two 20-ton turbofan engines made of aluminum, titanium, and steel, flying at 530 miles an hour, and they should have hit the side of the building and made pretty big holes by themselves. In fact, they should have made bigger holes in the fuselage. Fuselage relatively soft, right?
Right.
Well, the building is pristine where these engines should have rammed it. All right? And here's where I love it, the official story. Oh, well, the reason the engines didn't damage the windows is we reinforced the windows with armored glass. And I'm thinking, wow, why aren't we making army tanks out of that glass? I mean, we had
exactly.
I mean, 10, 15, 20 ton engines, whatever, at 500 miles an hour. Bounced off this stuff? Man, I'm impressed. That's what I want to build my house out of.
The physical evidence that really cracks me up about the Pentagon, my theory is they use some type of missile. But that's my theory.
It's the only thing that fits. Yes, I mean, it's...
They could have penetrated with that small hole and it's the thing that blows the Pentagon out of the water, the whole scenario about that, is the physical evidence. You've got the most secure building on the planet. Wouldn't you agree, the Pentagon?
That's what they keep telling us.
Right. That has how many thousands of cameras?
Well, that's what they were telling us.
How many thousands of cameras do you think that the Pentagon has?
Doesn't appear like they have any because we can't seem to get any film released.
Right. That's the whole funny thing about that. And we get three frames of supposedly the plane hitting the Pentagon, and I see no plane. And the other thing with the physical evidence, where's the damn debris? Where's the bodies? I mean, not to be ghoulish, but where's the bodies? Where's the debris?
Yeah, not just bodies, but, you know, what happens to a suitcase when it disintegrates? Like, I mean, clothes fly everywhere. Usually the tail section will break off and fall off and at least be in some kind of... I mean, I've seen pictures of jets that have crashed full speed into the side of a mountain, and you can still tell they're airplanes.
Right.
It's all there.
Right. And the physical evidence is so overwhelming that it just boggles my mind that this official report ran through. I mean, it sounds. You're knowledgeable. I mean, you're familiar with the architects and engineers of 9/11.
Yes.
The film technically putting the facts together is amazing, but it's kind of a snoozer.
Yeah, I suppose, but maybe if you're into that thing, it's okay.
Right. Well, I've seen many films on 9/11, and that puts forward the argument. You've got. What is it, over 2,000 architects and engineers all getting together basically saying that the official report is bullshit?
And I talk to people like this fairly frequently, and they said, well, who do you think did it then? And I said, well, you know, I don't know who did it. And you know what? Neither do you. Because no one's ever investigated it. I mean,
amen.
That's what you're supposed to do before you make a determination. You're supposed to, like, have an investigation, you know, talk to witnesses and publish information and put it out there and look at this, look at that. I mean, have a little adversarial relationship, devil's advocate the evidence until you come down to a determination. That's none of that's been done.
Right. And you know, and like I was watching Fox 5 and Friends today, and they were like really, really giving it to us. I'm going to put in quotation marks, conspiracy theorists. I call us conspiracy factualists because we seem to put a lot of facts out there that are disregarded and poo-pooed away. And they're making fun of us truthers, especially us 9/11 truthers, you know, poking fun at us and making fun at us. And the one shithead, I'm going to call him, I forgot his name, was the one that Jesse Ventura undressed, you know, about 9/11 and about the fact.
Right.
Forgot the guy's name. Forgive me, listeners, but, you know, and then he's going, well, yeah, and I was talking, and Jesse was there, and I was telling him that it's only 13 degrees difference between the jet fuel and the melting point of steel. And then, I'm like talking to TV, it's 1,327 degrees, you moron.
Yeah, you listen to these guys talk. I mean, I've heard, was it James Meigs, the editor of Popular Mechanics? All right,
this
guy has no scientific qualifications whatsoever, nothing. All right, yet he talks and he's being billed as an expert. He is one of the experts. And they did some TV show on History Channel or something, and he was figured interviewed a lot, and they kept saying James Meigs, expert, you know. And I said, expert on what? I mean, this guy used to be the editor of Video Review.
Right. He's an expert
on
bullshit propaganda. That's what he is.
Yeah, really. I mean, the whole thing is it's really such a farce. So listen to these guys talk. They truly have no idea what they're talking about, and they're so stupid they don't realize how ignorant they are, or is it the other way around? So ignorant they don't realize how stupid they are. Either one. Maybe both.
I agree with you. I think it's a combination platter there.
Yeah, really. It may vary from day to day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, I mean, again, I mean, don't get me wrong. I know a little bit about physics. I've never really studied it in college or any of the box schools, but I've learned. You know, my one friend that I turned you on to, Jason Verbelli, and Mystic Mind,
yes.
Danielle Brana. I mean, and James Rickey. I mean, I've learned all this. I know it sounds crazy. I've grasped it and learned it from these people on Facebook.
That's
friends.
Why not? I mean, it's not impossible.
No,
I mean, you'd be amazed how I talk to people all the time who are basically lay people. I talk to guys that had done nuclear engineering in the Navy and never had a degree. These guys are tremendously knowledgeable. You don't need to have a college degree in physics to understand basic physics. I mean, it's actually pretty straightforward, and it's pretty on a physical physics is fairly intuitive. And once you get into the quantum stuff, that's pretty weird, you know.
Well, yeah,
probably not something you'll be able to sit there and figure out.
I know. I mean, I have my feelings on that. I believe in the electric multiverse and quantum entanglement. I mix those two together, but that's. From the information and everything I've seen, that's the way I perceive it.
Yes, quantum entanglement is one of the most fascinating concepts to hit physics, I think, probably in a century. Just the idea that two particles or two entities or two anything, two energy waves could be connected on a quantum level regardless of distance. It's just mind-blowing, and if you look at the implications of it, implications go far beyond what you might even think as far as, all right, well, we can duplicate the spin in this neutron and another neutron 10 light years away and the spin changes at the same time. Yeah, that's all cool and theoretical, but I want to refer the listeners to a rather interesting book. It's a fiction book, but it's written by a fellow who writes mostly nonfiction, and the fellow's name is Graham Hancock.
Graham Hancock is
a researcher.
Yes.
You familiar with Graham?
Yes, but go ahead. Go ahead for the listeners.
He wrote a very fascinating, again, it's a fiction novel called Entangled. And it investigates the implications of entanglement by entangling two young women through history. There was a woman contemporary in our time entangled with a Stone Age Cro-Magnon girl. And the story flops back and forth between the two, and the way they become entangled is by the girl in this century experiments with ayahuasca, which is the ancient Indian brew, and that allows
right.
you, it's believed by the Indians, allow you to retune your brain to pick up these other universes, you know, just like tuning a television set or a radio. Anyway, and in the course of this fiction novel, he explores the whole concept of entanglement, I think, extremely well. I mean, for
a person who's
not a physicist, it's called Entangled.
Oh, simple.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. I enjoyed the heck out of it. It's supposed to be a trilogy, but he hasn't written part two and part three yet. So I'm going to bug him about that when I see him in October. I'm one of the fortunate few that are going to join Graham in Peru this October for a two-week expedition through some of the ancient megalithic sites through Peru and Bolivia. He's going there to do research for another book, a follow-up on his Fingerprints of the Gods. So that's something I'm truly looking forward to.
Oh, I am so envious of you, my friend. Good for you. I've got another friend I have to put you in touch with. He's James Swaggart the Fifth. He's been on my show a couple times. He's into ancient artifacts in Ireland. Do you know who he is?
Oh wow, that's not my area of expertise, but I'm completely fascinated. I've done a little bit of reading on it, but I'm nowhere checked out on it enough to discuss it intelligently.
Right. He's fascinating. I'm gonna have to put you in touch with him. I'm sure he would love to be in a circle with, you know, to pick Mr. Hancock's brain. That would
indeed.
Right. I mean his work is fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah.
And what people have to realize is the artifacts you're looking at in Peru and the artifacts he's looking at are 2,000 to 3,000 years older than the pyramids.
Oh, right, and still the jury's still out on exactly how old the pyramids are. And I guess there is some evidence that can date them to the time that Egyptologists date them to, maybe, but certainly not the Sphinx. The Sphinx is absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, far older. I think the best scholarship on the Sphinx put it somewhere around 10,800 B.C., somewhere in that range. And we're fairly positive that the pyramids, at least the foundation work of the pyramids, goes back that far. You know, it's possible the Egyptians did something with the pyramids when they say they did, but that's about as far as the Egyptologists have it right, if they even have that much right.
Yeah, I got you. The other thing that's fascinating to me is the way that our history books and our science books and our science study make ancient man out to be this dumbass knuckle dragger.
Yeah. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I don't know if you know who Michael Shermer is. He's the editor of that magazine called Skeptic.
Right.
You've probably seen him. You may not remember him specifically. And I one time told him he was the least skeptical person I've ever met. And you know, he rather took umbrage to that because, hey, I'm the editor of Skeptic Magazine, right? He says, well, no, I think you're not very skeptical because, I mean, you'll accept anything conventional from an official source without a single question. But if anybody questions an official source for an official story, you're all over them. You're asking questions, you're telling them this, you're telling them that, except when it comes from an official source, you shut up, you don't ask questions. And we got into a debate one time about the ancients, and he says, well, you know, there's no doubt that the pyramids and these ancient structures are magnificent works of engineering. Okay. However, you have to give the ancients credit. They were cleverer than we really thought they were. I mean, we believe that they were easily smart enough to do this. So I says, okay, well, if you believe that ancients were clever enough to build the pyramids and do this fantastic engineering and amazing astronomy, why don't you believe the other things that they wrote? Like, the gods came down from the sky and taught us language and gave us agriculture. And then you go, oh, well, those are just ancient myths. Those guys, they were just primitive dunces, you know, trying to explain stuff they didn't understand. I said, Michael, you can't have it both ways. You know, they're either
right.
Intelligent, clever, and competent, or not. All right, you can't say, well, they're clever, intelligent, competent when they're building stuff, but when they're writing stories, they're just a bunch of superstitious natives hiding in the tents afraid of the dark.
Well, I mean, I have my theories. I'm not sold on the little gray guys coming from other planets or other dimensions yet. What's your thoughts on that?
I'm actually not sold on that either. I watch that show on history. Actually, I'm addicted to that show, Ancient Aliens. I love it, basically, because I get such good imagery of these ancient monuments and some pretty fascinating theories and things I enjoy listening to. But I'm really more with Grant Hancock on his ideas. As his basic ideas boil down to, if you think about how long humans have been on Earth, half a million years, who knows? We don't really know for sure, but a long, long time. I mean, take the shortest estimate of 100,000 years. Look at our civilization. Look where we've come in 2,000 years. All right? We've been more or less modern for 100,000 years. I mean, we could have built our civilization 50 times over. All right? So the thought that there was an ancient civilization as advanced as us or more is really not far-fetched. I mean, it's perfectly within the realm of possibility. There's been plenty of time for it. And I'm kind of with Graham. Call it Atlantis, call it whatever you want to call it, but I'm fairly certain, convinced that there was an ancient civilization that had an extremely high culture and advanced technology. There was a major cataclysm on Earth that is not out for debate. Everybody agrees that there was a major cataclysm a long time ago, leading to the end of the last ice age. And in Graham's theory, that the sudden end of the last ice age caused a worldwide flood again. Not really controversial anymore. All right, we know what happened. We know in some areas it raised sea levels 200, 300, sometimes as much as 900 meters. All right.
Wow.
Any civilization on the coast would be wiped out. No question about it. All right. Even 100 meter, think about 100 meter sea level raise.
Right.
Okay. All right. They're gone. All right. A few survivors survived. How would be the best way, you would think, to keep the memory of the civilization going? Well, send the survivors out, get with the primitives, give them culture, teach them language, teach them art, teach them architecture, teach them culture, teach them law, teach them this, teach them that. And these people would, of course, be greeted as gods and immortalized in myth and legend and stories.
Right.
All right? They learned. I mean, that makes perfect sense. And that's the gist of Graham Hancock's book, Fingerprints of the Gods. So I'm with you, Austin. I'm less convinced of the aliens, and I'm more in the camp of a lost civilization from ancient times. And what we're seeing is their fingerprints. When we look at the pyramids, I mean, pyramids occur all over the world. I mean, every hemisphere and every continent, there are pyramids.
Right.
The myths and legends, they're all the same. The carvings in some cases are the same. You look at carvings from Egypt, look at carvings in South America, look at carvings, you know, Cambodia and throughout Asia. They're all the same. There's no difference.
Right.
It's the only thing that really makes sense.
Well, the, you know, that this all goes back around to one of my heroes, and I think he's one of yours too, is Tesla. I mean, we're coming around the around the horn. We're just having fun out there. I just want to let the listeners know, but we're coming around the horn because a lot of people of like Rodin, you know who he is, I'm sure. Tesla.
Oh, of course.
Right. These guys. You know, a lot of people and a lot of scientists look at things that they're making new discoveries. I think they're just drumming up old, ancient knowledge. I don't think there's anything new here.
No, I'm sure not. And somewhere, and I don't know what your feelings of the stories of Edgar Cayce and the, I guess, the Hall of Records that supposedly is underneath the left paw of the Sphinx.
Right.
Well, Edgar Cayce predicted it. You know, I was 10, 12 years ago, they did a sonic survey, and a ground-penetrating radar survey. They found a room, a chamber under there. The Egyptian government promptly shut down the research. I'd just like to know what's in that Hall of Records. That could be the records of that lost civilization, and maybe the key to the energy sources that have gone down in legend that Atlantis used, you know, the radiant energy. How did the Egyptians illuminate the inside of these pyramids when they're walking around? How did they illuminate the inside of their monuments with no carbon on the ceiling? I mean, obviously they had some kind of an illumination. Some people think it was electric. Who knows? I mean, but the information, I believe, still exists.
Right.
And I think it's behoove upon a lot of people to put pressure on the Egyptian government to allow a controlled investigation into that Hall of Records or that chamber under the Sphinx and find out exactly what's in it.
And I,
kind of fascinating stuff.
I'm like on the same wavelength with you is with what's going on, and I guess I would be with Graham Hancock too, because I think the same thing that there's a lost civilization, advanced knowledge, people with old ancient knowledge, and they were looking at these people, like you and I agree, as gods, as angels.
Yes, exactly. Like, if you do look at these stories, I mean, look at the stories in South America of their god, Viracocha, came from across the sea, all right, came out of the ocean, riding a fish. All right, what would that sound like? A submarine, maybe?
Right.
He taught us art. He taught us architecture. He taught us agriculture. Taught us how to plant. Told us how to figure out when the equinoxes and the solstices were coming. You know, when to plant, when to harvest. Taught us language. Taught us art. Taught us astronomy. And when you see carvings of Viracocha in these ancient monuments, all right, the guy looks like a Viking. He's got a beard. All right. Well,
right.
You know, the South American Indians usually didn't have facial hair. Now, here's a guy with a beard. All right, it's on the carvings. I mean, it's unmistakable. So, I mean, and that's just one of many items of interest, but of evidence that point toward that. So, I'm really, like I said, I'm really looking forward to getting some FaceTime with Graham and discuss some of these things in greater depth.
Well, you know, it would be incredible. I mean, if I could put it out there, I would love to have after come back on the show, and if you could get Graham, that I would be like totally indebted to you and giving you kudos and homage. I'm not worthy.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd be worthy of that either, but I'll give it a try. We'll give it a shot. I mean, Graham does all kinds of interviews. I don't think he would probably be against it.
He's amazing and fascinating for sure, and that would just blow my mind. I mean, I at least I know I can count on you coming back after Peru and give me an update on what was discovered and what's going on. Would you come back and share that with the audience?
Oh, I'd be thrilled. In fact, in 2 weeks, 26th, I'll be leaving for Asia. I'm going to spend a few days in Angkor Wat, and then I have some personal business to do in the Philippines. But I'll take this opportunity to go see Angkor Wat again. If you want to talk about that, do when I come back. It'll be very interesting. There's a couple things I'm going to look for in particular in Angkor Wat. And we won't get into that, but we'll talk about it later if I find what I'm thinking I'm looking for.
All right. Well, keep that under wraps. It sounds like, I mean, you know, I only have a 90-minute show here, but we definitely, Lisa and I would be honored to have you back on Guerrilla Radio sharing information. Maybe I could work out and get my friend James Swagger back on, too. He's amazing, too.
I'd enjoy that a lot. Yeah, I need to get his contact information for sure.
Oh, I'm definitely going to hook you up. I'm going to hook you up with his Facebook information, his Skype. I'll get you set up with him. You would be like Jason of physics. This would be your engineering archaeology man right here. You guys would be two peas in a pod. That's what I try to do, and I mean I believe in the higher power. I believe in God. I believe God's using this as a tool for me to network and get these brilliant minds together and to fight this damn NWO and fight this Illuminati. I mean, I'm not going down without a fight. No way.
I'm not either, you know, and I've had people tell me, well, if you don't like the government, why don't you leave? And I said, no, why don't they leave?
Yeah.
This is my home.
Exactly. Those scumbag tyrannous puppets in D.C., let them leave. Better yet, let's all the states secede and let Washington D.C. as their own little sovereign nation hold the frickin' bag. That's what I say. I didn't drop the F bomb. Almost.
I'm proud of you, buddy.
it was close. I caught myself though. But yeah, I mean that sounds interesting. Since we're on 9/11 and basically we're going around the horn, actually, you know, I want to talk about NWO technology. I guess this all ties in. I think they're covertly using and hiding ancient knowledge, and they're basically hiding it from us and using it in covert use. But then again, that's my tinfoil hat that I'm wearing. I was going to ask you about the World Trade Centers. I mean, I know there was traces of thermite found, and you know, well, it was pretty obvious it was a demolition, but there's been whispers going around. I don't know if it's disinfo or not. I want your opinion that actual scalar energy may have been used to bring the towers down and building sites.
I've heard the same thing myself, and, you know, basically, I don't know. I'm not even sure if I should weigh in on that because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, no, that's impossible, or yeah, that's possible. I don't think it was necessary. I don't think they needed it to bring it down. I mean, I think there's enough things pointing to a conventional thermite controlled demolition to say, well, I don't know what the purpose would be bringing the, you know, a scalar weapon into that. However, there were some anomalies that were found around the World Trade Center that were not explainable by the standard theories or the standard collapse. I'm trying to think, there was a fellow, Morgan something or other. I wish I had done a little bit more research on that before I came on board. I didn't know we'd be talking about this. It was kind of spontaneous.
You're fine, Ms. Paulson. Don't even sweat it. I mean, I come up with things. I look at so many things. I've been down so many damn rabbit holes. I got a friend of mine that says they're all one rabbit hole. When I realize that I'll be okay. But
if you want to get the basics. Does scalar technology exist capable of bringing down a building like that? I don't think that's even a question. Whether it was done in specific cases, whether it was done specifically in the case of 9/11, it's possible. I mean, certainly not impossible. I mean, there were some strange anomalies. I remember some photographs of cars burned that were like a mile away in a parking lot, and they were just completely fried. I mean, just burned to a crisp. And nobody could figure out how that happened. You know, maybe a piece of burning debris flew, 900 yards through the air and hit the parking lot and burned the car. I don't know, maybe. Who knows? But it's certainly not impossible. But I wouldn't sit there and just make those fantastic claims because I don't even think it's relevant. The fact that it was taken down on purpose, deliberately, to me is not even a question anymore. You know, the specific mechanism for that, you know, is I would leave open to a real investigation.
Well, this is my hot button. This is what really woke me up watching the buildings come down. I mean, I had doubts, you know what I'm saying, about things, but before that happened, I was I'll admit it, I was a conservative neocon, you know what I'm saying. I'll admit it. I kind of got ostracized by people. I'm going, that don't look right, man. That looks like a demolition. You know, and then the audacity that I would see something that didn't make sense and actually question it. I mean, you know, that's the funny thing. I mean, they make us out as truthers. I don't know. I'm not into labels, but, people's truther, we're seeking the truth. We just want to know what's happened. A proper investigation to 9/11. We're not asking for a lot. Then you hear all this propaganda. Well, it was done, and what else could be found, and all this, and it's just frustrating to me. It just frustrates me to no end. Like that guy on the Five said. Well, all these truthers, they don't have any answers. They just want to ask a bunch of questions.
Investigating is.
Right. That's the first phase of investigation to find the answers is you have to ask the questions. Duh.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. I mean,
right. Put a little Occam's razor to the questions you ask, and you know, usually the simplest solution is the best solution, and make it happen. I mean,
I would agree with that.
Right.
Where were you when it happened?
I was in my floor covering and home improvement store with my brothers in the morning, watching it go down.
I was on an airplane. I was flying from Miami to Bahamas. All right, and the first plane hit the first tower about 15 minutes after our plane took off from Miami, and the pilot came on and made an announcement, and the announcement he made was, we don't have all the information yet, but there was a major bombing in New York City, was what he said. It was a major bombing. All right, so we pulled into Freeport, Grand Bahamas. Of course, the place is pandemonium. Nobody can get in. Nobody can get out. The whole place is a mess. Nobody knows what's going on. No planes are taking off. And the first thing I told the guys with me, let's haul our ass to the hotel and claim our room before everybody here at the airport figures they can't get home, go back to claim it. All right, so we haul ass to the hotel, and of course, there's pandemonium there. We got our rooms, and the guy at the front desk was saying, yeah, there was a major bombing. Someone set off a bunch of bombs at the World Trade Center, and the building collapsed. And that was the story. Someone set a bunch of bombs off. And it was until later that night before we were able to get a good news report in the Bahamas, because everything was blacked out, that planes hit them. And this whole time we were thinking, bombs, 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 bombs.
Wow.
So
that's,
you know, maybe you could chalk that up to, you know, confusion in a stressful situation, everybody running around, but that was a story everybody got. Bombs went off in the trade centers. And then when you look and come down, yeah, man, they bombed that thing. No doubt about it. There's, oh, no, the planes did that. Huh? Planes can't do that.
So the first thing you thought is I mean, being the engineer and the background physics you had, you first thing you said is planes couldn't do that.
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing I said. planes couldn't do that. You know, yeah, I believe, yeah, the bombs, right. That's what they've been saying. That's what I've been hearing all day, bombs, bombs, bombs.
Well, on that note, I want to tell listeners, hold on. And can you hold on, my friend? I got to pay the sponsors. Got to pay the
sponsors. Absolutely, buddy.
Some ads, and I'll be right back with you, my friend.
10-4, I'll be here.
All right.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com. Let freedom ring.
Get out of the radio star. Documentary adventure ride of your life. Shades of Motion Picture.
This is the second or third time I think I've been on Freedomizer Radio.
And Bella Suburban's film.
The underground guerrilla radio.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We are here to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just clawed the world economy, bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up, speak out.
See the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at SheTheMotionPicture.com.
Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solovay. And Solovay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solovay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solovay. You sign up enough people, and Solovay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solovay.com/Freedomizer. That's Solovay, Solavei.com/Freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solovay.com/Freedomizer. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to FreedomizerRadio.com and also Facebook us right at FreedomizerRadio.com. Catch you there.
All right, guys. We're back with Alexander Paulson. Well, becoming one of my favorite engineers for sure. How you doing, my friend?
I'm back. Refilled my wine glass. Kicked back. Took a few minutes to let my three-year-old grandson show me how to use the iPad, and I'm ready to rock.
3 years old and on the iPad. A protege in the
world. Yeah, knows more about it than I do.
That's awesome. I'm going to bring in one of my good friends, one of the best friends that Gorilla Radio has. He does my intro, and he's a great, great guy. AJ Renegade Smith.
Hey, how are you?
Good to hear you. Good from hearing from you, brother.
Yeah, I'm sitting here listening to you guys talk about the Trade Center bombings, I should say. You're definitely right on that one. I'm still looking for the wreckage. You know, you're an engineer, right?
Yes,
I got a question.
Nuclear engineer.
All right, let me ask you a question. Maybe you can answer this. So you have a Boeing 757 that's 125 feet in length from wingtip to wingtip, not to mention the motors and the engines and the upright tail rotor. Okay, so how do you fit that into a 14-foot hole?
That's the operating question right now. Well, if you listen to the government, it just collapsed in confetti and it vaporized. Okay, what they said, it just vaporized. And I find that real interesting because they're also telling us, from the right hand, they're telling us that the entire crash vaporized, bodies, engines, seats, luggage, clothing, everything, completely vaporized, yet they were still able to get DNA samples of the hijackers. Nice trick.
If that's the case, I don't think I'd ever want to fly in a jet. It sounds pretty weak to me.
Yeah. Actually, a jet is fairly weak. If you look at it, it's just a little tube of aluminum. I mean, it's not really very strong. It gets its strength from its tubular shape. I mean, a tube is a naturally strong structure. All right, so you could get something that's reasonably stiff without a lot of mass. But the problem with an airplane is it's made out of aluminum, which is relatively soft. It's relatively light, so it doesn't have a lot of kinetic energy. And when it hits something hard, it basically shreds. Now, here's where the government got himself into a little quandary. When they talk about the so-called plane hitting the Pentagon, they come up with all this evidence. Well, we did studies on airplanes hitting buildings, and in reality, the airplanes do very little damage when they hit a building. They just disintegrate. And I says, okay, well, what happened at the World Trade Center then? Well, that was different, you know?
That's
they're giving two answers to the same question.
Well, no, that was 9/11 New York physics.
Yeah, different quantum entanglement. I don't know, who knows what's going on. But in reality, a plane hitting a building is not a traumatic event for a building. All right, especially
exactly.
One designed like the World Trade Center. I mean, a plane is fairly soft. It's going to shred into a zillion pieces. It's going to shred into confetti. All right. And the only thing that's capable of really doing any kind of serious damage would be the engines. But the engines would most likely destroy themselves also upon contact with a fairly strong girder. What's you going to take out? 2-3 girders at the very most? That's nothing. The building's not even notice that.
You're still going to find huge pieces of the jet. You know, maybe. Tail section, wings, and someone was saying, I believe it was Stu Webb, he knows one of like the top-rated pilots in the world, and he said that the angle that one jet actually hit the Trade Center at, it should have sheared off a wing. Well, where's the wing?
That's a good point. Yeah, that's, you know, I can't speak to that as an expert, but basically being familiar with engineering concepts, I would seem intuitively as yes, that should happen. They should have sheared off a wing. No question about
right.
it.
I was just watching. They had some. Go ahead, Austin.
Go on with your question, and then I want to get into and put on the X file stuff and get into some weird engineering and new weaponry. But go ahead, finish with the let's kind of wrap up the 9/11 after this question, and I want to pick your brain a little bit, Mr. Paulson.
Are you going to go into like wavelengths and you know energies, weapons of you know energy weapons and stuff like that? Is that what you wanted to go into? Because honestly, I think you know the Pentagon could have definitely been hit with something like that. But there's no wreckage there either. You know, they pull out this little jet, I don't know, like a prop or something. I don't know, but I could have picked it up. I know I ain't picking up no engine pieces from a 757 by myself.
Right. Exactly. 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 I wanted to get into basically I wanted to probe your brain about EMP, ELF, scalar waves, scalar technology. You don't mind going there, do you, Mr. Paulson?
How much time do you got, Austin?
we got a half an hour, I'm really big into EMP. I did a show on it, and I want to know your thoughts on electromagnetic pulse.
My thoughts on it? Well, it's what are my thoughts on the moon? It's there. I mean, we know it's there. It's unmistakable. It's a extremely devastating weapon. And I think we talked a little bit on our last show about how it does its damage.
Right.
If you want me to go over that, I can.
I want to dip into your theories where we started to go about the Russians and their use of it back in what you were saying.
Well, we have to realize the Russians have known about the existence of EMP a lot longer. They've known it for a lot longer than the West has. Okay, the story of EMP, the Russians had been building EMP hardened military gear as far back as the 50s. All right, Western scientists started to get a glimmer of even that the EMP effect from a nuclear blast even existed in the late 60s, and they found out by reading basically open scientific literature that talked about it. And the Soviets have been in this for decades already. They knew this effect. And the question is, well, how would the Soviets know it? They've never done a high-altitude atomic burst. All right. How would they know about the effects or even the existence of an EMP? But they did. All right. There was no question about it. I don't know if you remember years ago when the when that Russian pilot landed the MiG, was it Foxbat in Japan? I remember for years they talked about the scary MiG Foxbat. This thing was the most advanced airplane in the planet. I mean, it was practically something from the future. It was so devastating. I mean, if the Soviets ever field these in great numbers, the United States would never have a chance. Therefore, we must spend another $150 billion on new airplanes with Boeing and McDonnell Douglas. And all right. And then when a Russian finally landed one in Japan, all right. The first attitude was, man, what a piece of junk this thing is. Look, it's got vacuum tubes and its radar and fire control system. All right. That was about when the light bulb went on for the U.S. Wait a minute. Why would they have vacuum tubes in the fire control system? Duh. They're EMP resistant. Typically, EMP won't. Okay. That's when the light bulb came on. Wait a minute. The Russians know about EMP. Not only do they know about EMP, they're building their systems to be resistant to EMP. All right? And then once they started taking apart the airplane, they found certain key navigational components built in Faraday cages. which will protect you against an EMP, but not against a scalar wave.
Right.
So
well,
I learned
about those cages from Jason Verbelli. He actually, I believe, has a YouTube video on the cage itself, and he's under the real verbs, V-E-R-B-Z, on YouTube. Yes,
I'll check that out, but a Faraday cage would be more effective than your tinfoil hat, all right? But against a scalar wave, neither one of them is going to protect you, okay?
All right. Oh, I've got my lovely Gorilla Radio co-host. I see her on the line. I gotta bring in Liberty Lisa.
Hi, Elisa.
Hey there. Hi guys. How's it going?
Oh, we're having a blast.
Hi, Elise. Well, I'm out at a Liberty meet. I'm meeting with about a dozen Liberty-minded people, and we're all at rock bottom having a drink or two and just discussing current politics, and thought I'd take a break and come outside and say hi to you guys.
Oh, well, we're so glad you joined us. So how's the Liberty meeting going?
It's awesome. It's awesome. I dig it when you're around people who are awake and know what's going on and are doing something about it. It's nice.
you missed the beginning of the show. You'll have to listen to the rebroadcast. We were talking about the physics of 9/11.
Impossible physics.
Right. Well, I already tagged it. It was the New York 9/11 physics. It's a whole new genre. It's a whole new genre of physics.
Nothing in the world like it, you know. The only place you can get it is New York.
So like the laws of physics change when you get to New York, and in that specific, you know, strip of land, it defies everything
right.
that works everywhere else.
Well, it must. If you taste the pizzas of New York versus the pizzas everywhere else, the crust is different. You know, it has to be something about the laws of physics, gravitational, electromagnetic interactions. It has to be something like that.
Well, you know, I've been really, really wanting to buy the NISC official story. So now I know why. It all makes sense now.
Yeah, it all comes out
of pizza.
I'll take the 9/11 physics on that pizza. Yeah, stick around, Lisa. We're going into EMP and the Russian history of the technology.
You know what? Actually, I've been talking. I really have a strong theory that's what they're going to do to America is put off a EMP bomb and just kind of let everything go to crap, you know, from there. And that would result in, you know, obviously, we would have martial law and all kinds of craziness, and then there'd be nuclear meltdowns based on the fact they can't cool the reactors and all kinds of fun stuff. And I've been thinking, you know, I have tons of information and data on my computer, and I was wondering if there's ways to make that EMP safe.
well,
expired. I need to ask you one more question. I understand that you have made a statement indicating that there is no justification for Palestinian suicide bombers, but that there is also no justification for Israel to, quote, keep Palestinians caged up like animals, close quote. Did you say that, and if so, do you stand by that statement today?
Well, I said it, and I don't remember the context or when I said it.
Do you believe today that Israel keeps Palestinians caged up like animals?
No, if I had an opportunity to edit that, like many things I've said, I would like to go back and change the words in the meeting. No, it was, I think, in a larger context. I've said many, many things over many years. It was a larger context of the frustration and what's happening, which is not in Israel's interest, to find ways that we can help bring peace and security.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hey, everyone. This is Valerie Ann with the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio. We're here with Terrell and just wanted to say good evening. So, Terrell, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me? Testing,
yes.
One, three.
Yeah, I can hear you. I just want to make sure everybody can hear us. I believe they can. Now, Riker, my co-host, should be here any minute. I'm just waiting for him to come on. You know Riker. He's been with us.
Yes,
the
ma'am.
Last few times. Okay.
Yeah, some very good questions. I anticipate.
Oh, he's great.
Riker's questions, on this stuff. He wants to know about the Bible code, and he asks good questions about 9/11 and... And I have a question for you. The show that was on previously, was that a live show? Was that a tape show?
You know what? I am not sure, to tell you the truth, if it was live.
They were talking about 9/11, and they were talking about interesting topics.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make some comments. I've studied 9/11 for a long time.
Go ahead. Make some comments. Go. You know, they're probably still listening. So that would be
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed a lot of tension on the New York theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shifted over to the Pentagon just a little bit.
Okay.
And but that's where the story is at the Pentagon, and what you're going to want to look at are the timelines, the FAA terror chronology timeline versus the 9/11 Commission report timeline versus the Arlington County after action report timeline. You're going to see this is sworn testimony, and it's backed by evidence. And whenever you see wide variances in that, then somebody's lying. That's the reason that they give us chronological order timelines in their investigations. And people sit down, you know, like 9/11 Commission, they sit down and swear that this is what the truth is.
Of course.
So whenever you have a conflict in 6 minutes, and when AA-77 crashed, 9/31/39, 9/32, 9/37/46, 9/38, what's right? They should all say the same time. And they don't. And then Flight 93 crashed at 10:03:11, 9/11 Commission report. Arlington County after action report, 9:37, over a half hour later. So whenever you see the variances there, you know that there's a line going on. And the key is going to be that the botched attack at the Pentagon.
Right.
The missile is what struck the Pentagon at 9:31:39. The plane did not. That's when the poles were knocked down. 4 minutes and 48 seconds later, the A3 Sky Warrior, there was plane wreckage there. There were two Pratt & Whitney engines that were recovered from there. The time change parts, very important. Change parts, logbooks. There's two logbooks for maintenance that are kept on all of these airlines from the Navy to the the Navy uses Pratt & Whitney. That's like a Briggs & Stratton. On a lawnmower, the really high, you know, like a Honda motor, that's more high quality. That's the Rolls-Royce engine. That's what's in the 757.
Right.
So there's time change parts in those, and it only takes a little while. That's indestructible. There are fuel pumps. There's all kinds of things that have changed on time, not when they wear out, obviously. And these registry numbers change based upon maintenance schedules. Based upon when this jet has to come in again, the registry number tells them that. Well, the registry number N644AA for Flight 77 has never been assigned to any American Airlines jetliner in history. It's only one entry, and it's on 9/11, and there's no time. There's no taxi time. Now, I've got that all itemized. If you Google Terrell and N644AA, never existed, then you'll see my post that I wrote on. All the evidence is right there. So it's if that's the kind of investigation that you really need to do, you need to investigate and give precise information from government documentation that proves, for example, that FBI Special Agent Chris Combs, former New York fireman,
right,
assigned to school the local counties, and particularly his friend Chief Schwartz, that was number three in command of Arlington County. He became incident commander, and they began filing false reports at the Pentagon. That's the reason there's a conflict in the timeline, because FBI Special Agent Chris Combs and his friend Chief Schwartz at 10:15 filed the false report that Flight 93 was coming whenever it crashed more than 10 minutes earlier.
Right.
And they're all in conference together, in teleconferences together, the FAA, Air Traffic Control, and that's where C-130 pilot Lieutenant Colonel O'Brien gave the report at 10:05. The crash happened 2 minutes earlier. But whenever that report was given, the FBI heard it in their ears. It was teleconferenced. Everybody heard the information at the same time. And supposedly, according to the report, then FBI Special Agent Chris Combs had the radio, and he's the one that heard the information about Flight 93 coming in at 10:15. Now, the problem was that the E-ring roof didn't collapse when it was first attacked by the missile at 10:31. It did not collapse whenever the A-3 Skywarrior hit it at 9:37:26. Exactly. We have two sets of clocks that stopped at these times. That's how we know.
Right.
The investigation. You see, so it's the conflicting evidence in the government documentation. I'll try to cut it short because you can do a 5-hour radio show just on 9/11.
No, it's cool. We got an hour and 20 minutes, so go ahead, run with it.
Well, I'll give you a Black Star update.
Yeah.
And that when Riker comes, if he has questions on the – he actually gave about an hour dissertation today on the Bible Code to – pardon me, some of my family. And so I'm a little bit excited about that topic too. So it's whenever I come here, the thing I love about coming and working with Valerie Ann and Riker is your questions. Now, I'm
Thank
curious
you.
Where you're going to lead me around, you know.
I know you like the questions.
Yeah.
We have many of them. So.
And remember, yeah, on Thursday nights, I'm with Hijacker over at Freedom Slips Radio every Thursday at midnight. And Thursday's my big day. That's when I do the newsletter for the newsletter subscribers. And I make a 15-minute video for the newsletter subscribers answering their questions and things like that. And I gather the information on Wednesday evenings and Thursdays from my researchers around the world. There are four people are watching Magnetosphere for me. I've got a lot of researchers working together, and so that's the date that they funnel everything into me. And then it takes me, 6 or 7 or 8 hours to put the newsletter together, and then I'm making my chicken scratches for the radio shows.
Right.
So I'm prepared on Thursday for the 2-hour radio show over there at Freedom Slips, and then I'm prepared for your show.
Right. You really are. You always are.
Yeah. So that's
yeah,
kind of the pattern that for those who don't know, I hate to say it, but I've been depressed. But it's normal when your mother passes away. You get depressed.
Yes, and I'm sorry for your loss, by the way. I didn't want to bring it up on air, but since you brought it up, I just want to extend my condolences.
My mother
never
had a heart condition in her life.
Oh.
And she had leukemia, actually.
Yeah.
And she was in remission. She was doing quite well. She had lost 50 pounds. She was preparing for a heart procedure because she was diagnosed with a heart condition last March. She went to the hospital with Michael Owens, my chief astronomer and my feature writer for the newsletter. And he died on April the 2nd, which is the date on the 188-day cycle.
Right.
Last year, Stu Noodle, the European correspondent in the hospital, 7 weeks. They both were diagnosed with mystery viruses like a lot of other my researchers, including Texas Jean, who I just love to death. And now she's just got out of the hospital again. Heart attacks. She had to have stents put in. My sister-in-law, heart attacks, stents put in. This is a common pattern for people that are in direct proximity. We're talking about people 27 years old. Stu Noodle, 34 years old, multiple heart attacks in the hospital 7 weeks. So 13 of my people went down last March, dissolved Terrell's research group. And I know what it is. It sounds delusional, though, to try to explain everything to you guys. But so this cycle, I'm doing things just a little bit different, but I felt a little guilt about it when my mom's passing away from a heart attack, just like all these, everybody else is being affected by this.
Of course.
And so I'm hesitant. I'm wondering if I'm getting people hurt by, the things that I'm doing, but I'm being encouraged all the more by people that are being hurt by it saying that this is what I need to do either way. So I'm feeling guilt feelings on one side, and I'm getting charged up on the other side, and my dual personalities are conflicting, and I don't really know where I'm at.
I know. That's tough.
Yeah. So
tough. It's a big adjustment.
To get back just a little bit, I do have a Project Black Star update for you, but some of the people listening here they don't know what a tarot is, you know, and they might be a little confused about why I would be talking in such depth about 9/11 and now Project Black Star, the Bible. What are you talking about here? Well, I'm a Bible scholar.
Right.
And did that for decades. That's what I thought I was going to do the rest of my life. So I broke the Bible code, three witnesses of spirit, blood, and water. You can read about it at tarotlow3.com. There's an hour and a half of videos there. That's tarotlow3.com. In the left-hand column there, the two gospels, two churches, four baptisms, the differences between God and my Father who art in heaven, the differences between Jesus Christ and Christ Jesus, and then how the mystery diagrams work. That prepares you for my book, The Mystery Explained, so that you can have a baseline of information, a baseline so that we have a common understanding of what gospel means and church means and baptism. Okay, that's what I expected to do the rest of my life. And then on the fifth anniversary of 9/11, then because I wrote the book, The Mystery Explained, then I had come to an ending. And God sent me, tears were in my eyes, watching the documentary on the fifth anniversary of 9/11, and this is where God sent me to do.
Right.
So I got up in the morning every morning and got my coffee and started working on 9/11. And that's for 5 years, that's what I did. I ate and breathed 9/11.
Right.
And so the truth of that, I wrote that book, that's the 9/11 truth, the Cheney, exposing the Cheney-Rumsfeld black operation, which is what this is. This is about instituting the continuity of government. It's about initiating the illegal war on terror, which is going on in the world right now. It's appropriations for that coming through the consolidation of power in the administrative branch. That's where all the executive orders are coming from.
Right.
FEMA, part of the shadow government. See, this is getting a little bit deep for you. The Council on Foreign Relations Trilateral Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Been studying that since the mid-1970s. You want to read None Dare Call a Conspiracy by former Congressman Gary Allen. That PDF is also in the Dropbox folder. I've already assembled two research folders for you, and that's for the 2012 newsletters, Tarot's 2012 newsletter. 52 issues are already there from last year, and then the 2013 issues, they're being released right now. Volume 15 is the one that I just released. And also my books, The Mystery Explained and Exposing the Cheney-Rumsfeld Black Operation, those are in PDF form in there too. And None Dare Call a Conspiracy and, well, about 75 or 100 other documents that I feel are vital to understanding what's really going on here. So after I finished the Cheney-Rumsfeld Black Operation, by the way, chapter number 11, it's the most important chapter in that book. That's the 100-point timeline. It's link-activated, and you can do your own research. Chronological order, the top 100 events, they took place basically between 8:20 and 10:30 on 9/11. Most of them between the 9:30 and 10:15. And that's going to be from the time of the missile strike at the Pentagon until the time the E-ring roof actually fell. Now, when you look at those events in chronological order and do the research, then you'll be able to see the contradictions in the government documentation like I do.
Right.
And I'm not trying to get 9/11 right anymore. I'm not trying to help it. I work with, for example, the Center for 9/11 Justice. That is William Veal. And helping him, reformat his claims against Cheney and Rumsfeld and Myers and those guys. And I don't do that anymore. It's too late for that. What I use 9/11 for now is to show you the depth of corruption that is in and how the shadow government and the puppet government work together and what's really going on to help wake you up so you can see the larger picture of what's really happening here. Because all of this is geared towards Project Black Star. That's what you see. You're going to read that if you go to my website. Project Black Star is mentioned in the Dakota Report, and that was sent to me by Jim Mars for vetting. And it was doing that analysis report where I read the phrase Project Black Star and genocide that was connected to Project Black Star. And then I realized since the Elenin Project started,
right,
then see the keywording, that's what I did with Scripture to find the truth there, keywording the words of Scripture for where they appeared, where they didn't appear, where they grouped, clustered, and same thing with the government documentation. That's where my gift is taking in all the words, keywording them, numbering them, cataloging them, and breaking it all down, recognizing the pattern. And the word explosions not appearing in the 9/11 Commission report, nor the Hardin County After Action report. But the word singular explosions appearing in both documents 6 times, then this is the kind of pattern that you're looking for to figure out there's keyword sanitation going on, and then the contradictions of what's going on. So anyway, that brings us to Project Black Star and the Elonin investigation. Elonin, backwards, is 9/11.
Right.
And then the perihelion, whenever this object they were supposedly tracking, it was never an object. It was all a psychological operation. This object they were tracking was nearest the sun, going maximum velocity on 9/11/2011, exactly 10 years after the attacks. So, and those, that's just two of the anomalies associated out of a couple dozen that got me attracted to this investigation. And so I stopped 9/11 after writing the book, went back to my Bible work, and then this happened on December 10th, 2010, and I've been on this Project Black Star ever since. This is now my third year, and just tons and tons and tons of science that I needed to educate myself. So I never, didn't know what a brown dwarf was or any of that stuff.
Right,
so I
exactly.
Joined multiple astronomy groups, Astro Patriots Research Group over at Pow Talk, and educated myself and read up. And no, the same thing for 9/11. I didn't know fluid dynamics to understand the how the 5 light poles were twisted and knocked down by the bow shock of a hypersonic missile. I just had to educate myself and go, you know, learn as I went along. That's what I've been doing with Project Black Star. What we're noticing is a pattern of seismicity. That's a pattern of earthquakes that go back to 1965.
Right.
Okay, that's from the paper of Mincer Armour Bosich, April 11th, Cornell, 2011. Okay, so we have a pattern, and I'm not saying that he saw the 188-day cycle or even mentions it, but the 188-day cycle, if you keyword that, you see there's a lot of information on it.
Right.
That can only be true for a segment of the orbit of an object. Okay, this object, unless it has a circular orbit, then that's possible. For example, Saturn has a very similar kind of orbit. That means as Saturn's going around, it takes 30 years, 29 and a half years for Saturn to go around the sun once. Well, that means that the Earth comes between the sun and Saturn a little bit later in its orbit cycle each year. So there's a pattern there. So if there's a circular orbit for a larger object out there, there will be a pattern.
Right.
This object that's coming in here started creating Earth axis shifts in 2004 with the Sumatra event on that cycle. Then you had another one in February of 27th, 2010, 3-inch Earth axis shift with Chile. Next year, Fukushima. Okay, now, it's been my understanding from the research that Guerrero of 2012 was our event, but now, after further study, I realize that that is wrong. Guerrero, it's been an anomaly. I've said that maybe 24 times on the radio.
Right.
Guerrero is an anomaly. I could not explain so many things of it. Some things I could. 24 precursor quakes, 4 to 6 magnitude, just like Chile, just like Fukushima. There was a war game going on that started 1 hour sooner for the same magnitude that they got. So it looked like somebody knew what was going on. The HAARP arrays, just like the same HAARP rig that is being sent to Korea right now, was setting outside of Guerrero, it was setting outside of Chile, and it was setting outside of Japan on these cycles. So there's similarities here. But what it looks, I can't say this is a definitive conclusion, but what looks like happened is that Guerrero was staged, the entire event, to be near 188-day cycle for people like myself to latch on to.
Okay.
But here's the deal. 19 days later, Sumatra had a earthquake, was 8.7. Only 5 earthquakes in history have been more powerful. So I'm over here looking at Guerrero and not realizing Sumatra is my event. 2 hours later, they have an 8.2. The tectonic plate cracked in two. This unprecedented, this is the most powerful quake of its kind to take place in recorded history. So What I have to do is I have to add 19 days to my cycle. And that we have to add even more days to that on this cycle. So April 11th just goes by. The event that I'm anticipating, let me try to explain what causes this event, what caused Fukushima, what caused Chile. These are two of the most powerful ever recorded, and we're about to have one that's even more powerful, I believe. I think it's going to be off the coast of Korea because I'm seeing similarities that's going on. But let me tell you what causes it. Okay, the sun is sitting inside of a gravity well. Now, just imagine putting that bowling ball out in the middle of your king-size bed in the shape. Okay, it's a well.
Right.
Okay, Earth sits inside of a gravity well too, but it's smaller. But there's an intersection place in between where those two wells intersect. That's a trough, gravity trough. Now, let's imagine that this star that's coming in from the Virgo constellation also has a trough, but it's much deeper. And instead of being round, like a U-shape, that this object here has all the subatomic particles pushed together, so there's no empty space. So a regular atom is like, the sun is like, you know, the proton of an atom, and Pluto is like the electron, and there's empty space there. That's what the sun's made out of. That's what the Earth's made out of. But whenever our binary twin imploded, it pressed all those things together, and it created a, well, something that's going to be similar to a neutron star or a black dwarf star or something of that nature, so that the gravity well resembles a black hole. It's going to be narrow at the top and very, very, very deep. And what this does, it creates the perfect conditions for the gravitational lensing effect. So that instead of being able to see the actual object that's sitting way down into that gravity well, that we see the stars that are in the distance. Okay, so, and it's super, 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 super cold. It is releasing subatomic particles that are having difficulty leaving that high gravity environment. So they're leaving according to magnetic lines. And these magnetic lines push together along the equator because it's spiraling.
Right.
So the magnetic, and what you get is what's shaped like ribbons, twisted ribbons that resemble very much the double helix of DNA. It's the same shape as the galaxy chains. They're also spiraling and turning like that in the same way. So our Milky Way galaxy is just one star in a galaxy chain. So it's the same shape that we see in nature and inside of our bodies too. Okay, but because it's spiraling, those magnetic arms that would be the ones on the top are kind of stringy. The side are two and three and four of them pushed together. The subatomic particles are coming out. And what you get from the spiraling of that black star is arms that looks like a bird's wing. Okay, and when you're looking down on it, it actually looks like a hurricane. And it has arms that are coming around, bands out of a hurricane. So as this thing comes in proximity, just like a hurricane, then the outer bands start smacking the shore.
Right.
So add one day and one year to Fukushima, you get March the 12th, 2012. That's the date that our magnetosphere turned around. The bow shock, which is the side that faces the sun all the time, the compressed side,
right,
turns around and it faces the Virgo constellation, so an area between Leo and Virgo. The tail that's supposed to always be being pushed by the solar wind away from the Earth, away from the sun, turned around and pointed at the sun because there is something coming from out there.
Right.
It's the same thing that can create a gravity trough that I'm talking about that Earth goes through once a year. It also has the spiraling electromagnetic arms that gathers up the subatomic particles released by the sun, the protons, basically, and it redirects them back through our magnetosphere when we're between the two stars. So when Earth is on the backside of the sun from this object, which is October, September, October, November, then it's impossible. This magnetosphere reversal is impossible because the star solar wind and the sun solar wind is going the same direction. This only happens when we're between the two. Okay, and let me read you why I'm on this topic. This is
sure.
This is down in my notes a little more. So I have people that are watching the magnetosphere very carefully because we've been anticipating that the magnetosphere is going to flip around.
Yeah, I've been watching videos on it. I think Astro Patriot was one of them.
Yeah. Okay, so B. Pierce, he's a YouTuber. He's a fellow. He's good on that stuff. And he sent a request to because he wanted to know why there are so many emissions. Why are they taking out data? Freezing the frames? Why are they doctoring data giving us what? This is the response that he got from NASA. It says, from Administrative Department from NASA. We apologize for the freeze. Unfortunately, there were some unusual coronal video correction anomalies spotted in the stereographic live streams needing attention. Archived images from the dates of March 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, 2013 have been omitted from the record pursuant to Joint Homeland Security and NASA directive. Corrected imagery, let me say that phrase again, corrected imagery for the anomalous coronal keyframe in question have not been cleared for public dissemination and likely to remain unavailable until further notice. So, corrected imagery. What we're talking about is we're supposed to be able to watch the magnetosphere of our planet. We're supposed to be able to watch the solar flares that are coming off the sun, but we're not seeing real-time images anymore because of a NASA/Homeland Security directive. Now, in 2009, the rules changed for NASA. NASA's not allowed to inform us about an inbound object anymore. Now that it's been, they are allowed and they are commanded by law to give that information to the Department of Defense. And then the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security decide if we're allowed to see it or not. So last year, NASA, the Department of Homeland Security and Department of Defense had they were caught with their pants down.
Right.
Whenever the magnetosphere turned around, they didn't catch it soon enough to be able to eliminate the frames. So people like suspicious observers were able to gather the data and reassemble it, and that's where we have, if you go to the Dropbox folder, when you become a newsletter subscriber of mine, you go to the Dropbox folder, and there's about a 10 meg file in there of frames where you can watch the magnetosphere turning around for 28 hours. Okay, I can't give that to you this cycle because they're smarter now, and they're eliminating, they're just freezing the data and then pulling out the frames. I don't know yet if they are inserting looped images, if they're giving us false data, or exactly what they're doing. It's difficult to tell now. We're going to know that in hindsight. Okay, and I'm slow about drawing a conclusion, but I do know what's happening to the magnetosphere is that it's flipping around. So right now, two other things to realize before I go any further is that the sun's heliosphere, okay, the reach of our solar system is about 100 astronomical units. So there's a pressure shock out there, the reach of our solar system, pressurized by the solar wind. Okay? That magnetic field.
Oh, go on. My apologies.
Happy puppy.
oh, yeah.
The magnetic field surrounding our Earth is weakening. The heliosphere around the sun is shrinking. It has shrunk by 25% in one decade. And that's a lot. Okay, the electromagnetic field, the magnetic field around the magnetosphere around our Earth is weakening. The heliosphere, the electromagnetic bubble around the sun is weakening too. And there is something that's causing this. And there's a lot of other symptoms that are going on at the same time. The reversing magnetosphere, this pattern of seismicity that's going on. What the government's doing, that's the geopolitics. What's going on? The Earth is convulsing in ways that it hasn't done. That means that the magma coming out of the volcanoes in Africa or from the center of the Earth,
right,
deepens. And this kind of unprecedented stuff. The sinkholes that are going on around the planet right now.
Yeah, Russia. I wanted to bring that up about the sinkholes, but I have to go to break and remind me. I wanted to bring up about the sinkholes that happened this week. There were several pretty bad ones in Russia. That I wanted to also discuss. I'm just looking for the article. But I don't want to cut you off, but let's go to break, and we're going to be discussing all that and the sinkholes. So, everyone, we will be back momentarily.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing.
stickers from libertystickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's libertystickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you...
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy. But it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Hello, everyone. Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house. And Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it. And this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors where you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Okay, everyone, this is Valerie Ann with the Truth Exposition Show, and we have Tara along with us. Tara, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Yeah, so I wanted to elaborate on the sinkholes, and I'm trying to bring up on the break, I was looking for the article that was discussing Russia had several sinkholes this past week, including Spain as well. Mm-hmm. And other people want to say, hey, it's probably because of infrastructure. Okay, I get it. You know, certain countries, especially including ours, our infrastructure can be crumbling in certain areas. But when you are getting concurrent sinkholes in different parts of the world, too frequent, that is not due to infrastructure, in my opinion.
Okay. The right answer for this, that's something that I've been looking at for the last couple of years, and there's
right.
a pattern.
Okay.
Okay. And you're looking at the end of winter. So
okay.
Think about the fact that not all of these are going to be caused for the same reason.
Right. Okay.
All right. It's like robbing of banks. They're being robbed, but they're not all being robbed for the same reason. So when we're looking for a reason, okay? So, for example, from my personal experience, the growth of strawberries, that's going to sound kind of strange, doesn't it? Happens in February. This is whenever we have the cold weather in Florida. So I'm from Florida. And the cold air comes down, and the way you protect them is by spraying them with a lot of water real fast. So the growers of strawberries, and it's been a cold winter this time. So here we go. Here comes the cold air. The only way to protect them is to spray, and they start pumping like crazy all these fields.
Right.
And then they lower the – whenever you get a fluctuating water table going up and down and sloshing, then then the ground starts moving. And so, that's whenever you create the perfect conditions. Now, whenever you got – it's not just – okay, that's one scenario. The other one is you're having record, particularly in Russia, you've got record snowfall.
Right.
And melt. Then whenever you get all that melt, you get the extra groundwater. So that's the same thing because you're getting fluctuating groundwater levels. But also, whenever Chile event happened and whenever Fukushima happened, then stories on the same day, when we went through that trough, we had fluctuating water tables in areas that did not experience what I just said above. So there's multiple reasons why the water tables are fluctuating, and some of it's due to what I'm calling cavitation.
Okay.
The boat, if you have ever had a boat and you had the trim wrong and your boat started shaking, really, really, really shaking, and then you know what I mean. When things are off a little bit, and it sends shock waves through the earth, and then that helps the process even more. So we're looking at a dynamics environment out there. It's being affected by this star that's coming. That's true, but that doesn't mean that's the sole cause of it. There's
okay.
other things that are going on, too. Fluctuating water in the groundwater is going to be part of what causes that, too, whether it's going up or whether it's going down. So you have voids that are down there, and the water going up and sloshing affects that. And then they start falling. You get that the ground starts moving on top of it. And then once you start having that, once you start seeing that phenomenon in a particular area, then you create a better environment for it to continue. So that's what we're seeing right now. And I do believe that is one of the symptoms of the black star coming.
Right.
Because how it affects our environments as a whole.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I believe it is connected somehow.
Right.
Yeah,
so you see the colder, the record snows now. How many
right.
times in Europe? How many years in a row now?
Right.
Last year the United States was spared, but now we're not being spared anymore. And in my view, this has to do with partly magnetic pole migration,
mm-hmm.
moving in that direction,
right.
which carries the jet stream further that way. And the depleted ice sheets in the north, but not in the south, and that has to do with the metal distribution, magnetite. Magnetite under the North Pole and electromagnetism. So the star is getting closer. The magnetite is receiving the electromagnetism. It's in the induction process. It's like an induction cooker. So the metals, the ice that's in direct proximity to the magnetite is going to be melting a lot quicker. And the largest magnetite deposit on the planet is under the North Pole. So you're seeing some different things happening under the North Pole, record amounts of methane that are being released and with the depletion of the ice. But that means that the ocean conveyor has been powered a lot, extra melt for years in the past. But now there's not enough water up there. There's not enough drip. When the drip slows down, then the ocean conveyor slows down, and the warm air from the equator cannot make it up to the north, and then you begin a mini ice age. So
right.
at some point, we have the warm winters, and they stop suddenly, and then we start having record cold winters. And you're seeing a different pattern, as in the past, because of the magnetic pole migration, leaning into Siberia, taking the jet south there. So they've had the colder winters, a lot of them in a row. And then each spring, you have a lot of melt. and that melt extra groundwater into the ground, sinkhole scenario right there. Okay, so the dark star coming accentuates that because of the weather change, and it accentuates that because of the pattern seismicity. Then you get a pattern, a resonation pattern. And Keith Hunter is one you might Google. The music of the spheres is what he talks about. Right. I think that he's right on some of what he's saying. I don't think what he's saying explains everything, but he does a good job of explaining some of what's happening here. And he has a neutron star hypothesis that it's rather than my dark star. He can't give you directionality. He carries it so far and stops, which a lot of the people that are lettered, that are vetted, the brilliant men that have reputations, they go so far and stop. See, I'm a nobody. Now, I don't have a reputation.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, really, yeah. I dropped out of school in high school. You know, I'm all self-educated. But I've invented medical devices, and which I went patent pending on several times. Don't have money to be able to do anything. Like I said, you know, I'm a nobody. If I had one rich guy that would sponsor me in my projects, then pressure sheet technology could eliminate kidney stones from the world, gallstones from the world. The in vivo insemination could be available to everybody. Remote control surgery, very, very simple. Using pressure cuffs and the technology that I invented in 1995. If I could get one rich guy to work with me, but you know what Christ says about the rich guy? He can't make it into the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
And while I got a perfect testimony of that, I've been pleading for decades, and I can't get one, so I'd have to say that he's right. But vapor plasma integrated engines, a long list of things that the world, we should be vaporizing our hydrocarbon fuels. We should be using gigantic manifolds, and we should be using exhaust to heat it, creating heat energy loops. And you can get 200 to 300 miles per gallon because you're also going to use the energy to break. You say, well, you don't have enough energy to break the hydrogen bonds, oxygen bonds in water. Yes, you do. It's right in front of us. It's released from the hydrocarbon burn. So you learn to use that, and you break the bond, and then you inject the hydrogen in with the hydrocarbon fuel. And what happens is you've got a water and oil situation. You're using water and oil. See, all of my Bible, my interpretation of Scripture is spirit, blood, and water. Well, my vapor plasma integrated engine program, that's from the Terrell Corporation, by the way, and I was patent pending on that until I couldn't get anybody to work with me. But anyway, it's the same equations from the Scriptures that work the vapor plasma integrated engines, so that the blood witness that's in the middle, that's where the power, that's the cylinder in the beginning whenever we begin the program, but it becomes a reactor. Less and less hydrocarbon fuel you need with the hydrogen, and then you even utilize the oxygen too. And what you end up with is extracting the water right out of the air and a minute amount of hydrocarbon fuel until in the later stages we're looking at a reactor where the components are actually gathered from the environment and you have plenty of power. But what I need is somebody to, I've got the technology and I've had that for decades. What we don't have is sometimes you just need a sponsor of a radio show to get this radio show off the road, if you've ever been in that boat, right? And that's the problem that I've had throughout my life, is I start these projects and I can't go any further because it requires the funding,
right,
to be able to do it. And I'm a truther. You know, Scripture, it doesn't cost me anything to be a truther in Scripture. You know, to investigate 9/11. So that's where my lead, that's where my role has been, is to gather the truth and to be able to share that. So now I've kind of gone back around, looking at the clock, and then we're not near a break. So let me take this second just to say the way that you can help my research is to become a newsletter subscriber. $25 for 2 years, 2012-2013. You get my books. You get other books, PDF form that I suggest that you read so that you can see the pattern. So that's what I do, is I broke the code of Scripture. There's a secret code. It's right in front of your eyes, spirit, blood, and water witnesses. And I want you to see the pattern. Once you see the pattern, it's like giving you a fishing rod instead of a fish. Then you can figure out the rest of it for yourself. And then with 9/11 is the same thing when you see the pattern, and now with Project Black Star. I have to admit that I have lost the pattern right here. I thought I knew exactly where this thing was for the last year and a half, and
right.
Now I realize that I'm wrong. But that's what science is trial and error. Edison
exactly.
did it 99 times before
exactly.
he got it right, and I know that there's something out there. It's in the it came through Leo.
Right.
That's when Saturn developed its superstorm, whenever there was an alignment event
mm-hmm.
in late 2008. And that's the Fukushima-like event that took place on Saturn. And then we've got our pattern of seismicity, magnetosphere flipping around, and magnetic pole migration to the pattern, the earthquakes, 6 to 8 magnitude earthquakes. So I can go back to 1900 and look at the chart for the 6 to 8 magnitude earthquakes and see a clear pattern. It goes up and down with the solar cycles, okay? And that's pretty consistent until you get to 2008. And then that number goes into the sky, parabolic. And that's during the solar the minimum. Okay, now we're in solar cycle 24 right now. And if you go back and look at 23, 22, you're looking at what looks like a mountain of activity going up. Well,
right.
Now take that mountain and cut it in half. That's what solar cycle 24 is. So the heliosphere is shrinking, the magnetosphere around our planet is shrinking, solar cycle 24 is a dud, and the sun is reacting in a way that the heliophysicists cannot explain. They don't know what's causing it, and all I can say is that there's something coming out there. I believe it's the binary twin to our sun. As it gets closer to our sun, I think the coronal holes continue to get larger.
Right.
And larger and larger,
right.
And the sun continues to look angry until it turns black. And if you look at prophecy predicts that the sun is going to turn black and that the moon is going to be as blood, turn red like blood, which is going to be the long wavelengths. Rather than the blue side, it's going to be the red side. And so I can easily see how that's the scenario of the 3 days of darkness rather than in the past, if you've been following my work, then the people to receive the prophecies about the 3 days of darkness are all in the northern hemisphere. So what I thought we were looking at is a geological pole shift where the Earth bends backwards for 3 days. But now I'm leaning away from that. One reason is because the opportunity for geological pole shifts, we're talking about the crust of the Earth actually turning, being bent. The Earth, remember, is a spiraling top going around the sun. The sun is the magnetic polarity controller. But when you bring another star into the equation with magnetic polarity conflict to our North Pole, I believe that's what's causing the magnetic pole migration. Okay, so what I'm explaining is that there is all these symptoms can be explained from one thing, and that is a black star coming from now the Virgo constellation, or perhaps it's already into the Libra constellation. So I was able to tell people for the last year and a half just about how many 2.5 to 4 magnitude earthquakes we were going to have on a weekly basis.
Right, exactly.
And I knew when the bottom of the trough was going to be, the V in my graph, December 28th, because that's when we reached outside orbit position. The magnetic portal connection stretched. The umbilical cord from the secondary star in the Earth was stretched. That means the Earth received less and less magnetism because on the inside there are conduits and fewer percentage are active as that magnetic portal connection is strengthening, as it's lengthening. As it's shortening, remember this magnetic portal connection, like an umbilical cord, disconnects and reconnects. The cord from the sun to the Earth disconnects and reconnects every 8 minutes. And if the Earth is getting near the sun, as it does, it's the nearest on January the 4th, then the higher percentage of those internal conduits are active. And as we're moving away, as the Earth is right now until July the 4th, then a lower percentage of the internal conduits inside that magnetic portal connection are active. So knowing there's a secondary magnetic portal connection and knowing if it's stretching or shortening, that's my trick. That's how I can tell.
Right.
Until the middle of February to this year, because the chart started coming up. We had 181 earthquakes, and then we had, say, I've got the chart right here. On my week, December 28th, we had 181. That was the bottom of the trough. We came down from 255 talking about 2.5 to 4 magnitude earthquakes that are recorded by the USGS around the world. These numbers are actually very low, maybe 20 to 30% of the real numbers. But we have to acknowledge the fact that the USGS is a consistent liar. So what we're looking for is a pattern in the chart, not the actual number. That's important. So the bottom of the chart, down from 255, the second week in November was 181. Then after going down week after week, I said, it's going to start going up now. Mm-hmm. And it did, from 181 to 212 to 292. Okay, then we leveled off at 212 and 227, but then the number started going down. And there's two reasons that it could be. One, the magnetic portal connection is really lengthening when it's supposed to be shortening. Or number two, the reason that I'm monitoring the 2.5 to 4s is because I'm looking at the periphery of the calderas around the world that are bulging because of the extra magnetism. This is another symptom. Where the areas around the Earth where the crust is thin, that's the calderas. Whenever the magma is getting hotter, the Earth is heating up, those calderas bulge. Whenever they bulge, then we have lava tubes that service them, and the pressure inside those lava tubes grows, and then the plugs that are plugging them break. That's what creates the smaller magnitude earthquakes. So at the end of the cycle, when all of the plugs are broken, that number is supposed to go down. So this is a warning sign if we're near the end of the cycle. This is bad whenever that number goes down.
Okay.
So this could mean the thing is here now. I thought this would happen later in the cycle because I had a regular 188-day cycle. As long as this thing's, I have a regular pattern of seismicity, it means the thing's farther away. The reason, because remember the Earth goes around the sun.
Right.
It's going 180 million miles from one end to the other. Well, as long as this thing is far away, it's moving left to right from our perspective very little. As this thing gets closer, it's moving left and right farther and farther and farther, because remember the Earth is going by at 66,000 miles per hour.
Right.
Okay, from the left on the near side orbit and from the right going right on the backside orbit. Okay, so as long as the pattern is stable, then it's far away. Whenever the length of days in my events on the 180-day cycle start lengthening, that tells me that it's getting closer. When the magnetosphere starts turning around for long durations, it means it's closer. So what I'm trying to say is that the warning signs are here, and the thing is closer. Okay? Now,
The closer it gets, are we going to start seeing higher magnitude earthquakes, more frequent, right?
Yeah, that's what's already happening.
Well, it's already happening. I just want to let you know that about 45 minutes to an hour ago, it was posted that there was a 6.7 magnitude quake in New Guinea. Mm-hmm. So I also want to thank Twilight in, you know, our chat room for providing that update. So that's, you know, that's what's happening right now.
Okay, I see we have just about 4 minutes for the break.
Yes.
Introduce this, that there is a date that this object that's coming around the sun, there's a date that Earth crosses its orbit path. This is a most critical date in the timeline in the spring. That's what we're approaching now.
That's okay. What I kind of figured.
Yeah. Now, the worst case scenario is that the crossing date and the alignment date are the same day. That's the worst thing that can happen.
Okay.
The fact that we haven't had our event yet is bad. Along with this other evidence, the shrinking number of 2.5 to 4 magnitude quakes is bad.
Right.
Okay? These are bad symptoms, meaning that it's close. Okay?
Right.
Now, here's the thing I'm warning you about. This is the reason I'm going to be in my safe zone position in the Ozarks in the middle of May. Because we're based upon a curved line coming out of the Virgo constellation, a curved line that has created this pattern of seismicity going back to 1965. We're going to cross the orbit path of this thing on May the 17th. Remember the Earth travels? It's about 18.5 miles per second around the sun. That's 1.6 million miles per day. So every day we don't have this large magnitude event, I'm eliminating a section of space, a segment, that's 1.6 million miles long. Right now the Earth is between the Sun and the Virgo constellation, just about in the middle, and we're moving to the left.
Right.
We're going to cross Saturn's orbit on April the 28th at the feet of Virgo, and then we're going to head into Libra the next month. Okay. Now, that's in the month of May. Now, the closer if we have an event within 2 weeks of this May the 17th date, this is a critical date in the timeline, then the likelihood of a geological pole shift is in the cards.
Yeah.
That it's going to cross. If there's this is the most difficult kind of model to build of what's going to happen on a crossing event. If this thing passes just in front of the Earth and it's increasing in velocity, the Earth tips backwards. Remember, the North Pole is always going to be leaning away from this thing when it grabs magnetic polarity control. So the Earth's going to be a spinning top that's bobbing. It's going to be wobbling. North Pole pointing away from it. So if this thing is still on outside orbit, if it's still outside of our Earth orbit, we could turn the North Pole towards the Sun. And then as it's coming by, the North Pole is going to be tipping away from the Sun. Okay, so try to kind of build that in your mind.
So either way, it's going to be tipping.
If we have a crossing event.
Right, if we have a crossing event, absolutely. That's what I was saying.
The fellow that I was working with during the Elden cycle 2 years ago insisted that we were having a crossing event. He never thought we were going to have a perihelion alignment event. That creates a 90-degree pole shift. He always said from the beginning this is going to be a crossing event. Now, a crossing event, nobody can tell you what's going to happen. The Earth can tip 90 degrees. It can tip 180 degrees.
You don't know yet, right?
The Earth tips around so that the North Pole faces this star, then we could get a pattern going, and the Earth could continue flipping until it moves far enough away. There are many scenarios for what can possibly happen on a crossing event. So all I'm saying is we're watching for a very large event because I think the thing is close. And it's going to be a 9.5, or I believe it's going to be off the coast of Korea. And the longer that it waits, it means that it's closer and closer to being near Earth orbit path.
It's kind of like the calm before the storm.
Well, the sun is acting very strange. You're just talking about another 6, almost 7 event. We're having lots of, bit larger events now. You saw.
Yeah, we're having more CMEs now. Yeah. I was monitoring it, yeah. And the solar wind is increasing, and our magnetosphere is becoming more compressed. I've been monitoring the activity, yeah. Now,
strange.
Also, there's this week it was a 5.8 and a 6.0 earthquake in Japan as well. And then what about that earthquake in Iran that just happened, what was it, the last couple of days, right? And it killed 37 people.
They had about 24 quakes, 4 to 6 magnitudes.
Right, exactly.
To Fukushima, I was watching Iran to see if they were going to be the big event.
Right.
Outside of the Ring of Fire. All of the cycle events are Ring of Fire Pacific Ocean events. So that Iran would have been off. It would have been way west of Sumatra, which has been on the west side of the event zone. So I would have been surprised, but I've got my earthquake 3D going, and I see the stack of flags 4 to 6.
Oh, I have the same thing. I have the 3D. Yeah, I have the same thing.
I'm wondering if I was holding my breath to see if Iran was going to be the event. But now I'm feeling more and more that Sumatra last year, April 11th, was my event.
Right.
And that means that this thing is farther left in the orbit diagram.
I see.
And to add more days than we did from Fukushima to Sumatra, that's 30 days. So this event could be May the 11th or even farther. And that's what makes me scared is May the 17th, is I think is the crossing date. But that could even be wider than May the 17th. The orbit path could actually be wider.
Okay.
And I think it is. So that may outside orbit May 17th, I could be wrong on that.
Right. Well, when you talk about, when you say a lot, like a major event, the event itself, are you talking about like a mega quake? Because I know I was watching documentaries on the possibility of mega quakes.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Right. Just want to make that clear. Okay.
We're talking about a Pacific Ocean Ring of Fire event if it happens.
Right.
If it happens tomorrow, if it happens the next day. But there's a point in the timeline that coming up where we're going to get beyond. And once we get beyond that point, we're talking about a global event.
Right, exactly.
About the event of another star grabbing magnetic polarity control of our planet and tipping us over so that the oceans crawl up on the land. So this is the time to be. This is the time to worry about that. Once we get beyond May 17th and a couple of weeks go by, we're going away from its orbit path 1.6 million per day. And once we get far enough beyond, then what we're looking at is there are variables in the equations. I don't know the mass ratio from the sun to the black star, the magnetic polarity strength ratio from the sun to the black star. Once we get far enough away, we're going to outside orbit. position about the middle of July. That means we're farthest away from this thing in its orbit path. So a geological pole shift may be out of the cards then. But
right.
there's unknowns there. What it means for me is I have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
Right.
That means I have to leave Florida and get into my safe zone. I'm going to be heading in that direction at just about the first week in May, whenever we get close to that orbit path, especially if we haven't had the event yet.
So right.
If we've had a large magnitude event, talking about a gigantic 9.5, 9.3, I think it's off the coast of Korea. If it happens tomorrow or the next day, then I know this thing is still some distance out there, and I'm not worried about a geological pole shift.
Right, exactly.
If the event doesn't come, that's whenever there's uncertainty in the modeling, and then I start getting scared.
Right. Well, you know what to look for. That's the thing. You know what to look for. How long will it take you to get from Florida to where you have to go?
2 days.
Okay.
Yeah. And, Valerie, I can see by the clock that we need
yeah.
to...
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, everyone, so we'll be back after off. We're going to take a 3 to 4 minute break, and we will be back. Once I get this working. Here we go.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hi, this is Mary Lou Van Houten, co-host and producer of Getz and Rising on FreedomizerRadio.com. Join host Libby Getz and me every Monday through Thursday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk with cutting-edge guests about the truth of a variety of topics. We are 100% free speech. Getz and Rising on Freedomizer Radio, because you can handle the truth.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at FreedomizerRadio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Hey everyone, this is Ron from Ron's Media Matrix on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Be sure to catch my show broadcast here every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you're listening in another part of the world, that's 1800 to 2000 hours Greenwich Mean Time. We're here covering breaking world news, current geopolitical trends, keeping you up to date on the latest science and technology, along with interviewing a wide range of guests, versed in a variety of special topics, and that's not all. Freedomizer Radio broadcasts 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, with other talk show hosts that cover a wide variety of topics, including health, current events, emergency preparation, spiritual interests, and much, much more. So be sure to stay tuned and at www.freedomizerradio.com. That's www.freedomizerradio.com. And if you're away from your home computer, you can always listen to us on your cell phone by calling 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. And thanks for listening.
Val, can you hear me?
Rob Nellen Live is a show exposing the fallacy of the right-left paradigm while promoting liberty and freedom. A plethora of guests will challenge the establishment, mainstream media, the New World Order, and hopefully you. Listen to Rob Nellen Live Sundays between 3 and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Tune in
Each Thursday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community on Freedomizer Radio, talks about stress management and homeopathy. Get healthy with energy medicine.
Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where Freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Okay, everyone, this is Valerie Ann with the Truth Exposition Show. We're back with Terrell. And we were discussing the frequency of the higher magnitude earthquakes that may be coming our way. All right, so how did we leave off? We were discussing the earthquakes and about the a possible major event that's happening or coming up in the near future.
Yeah.
Now, also with the magnetic pole shift, my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the outer crust of Earth is supposed to be what is shifting, not the inner core. Correct?
Yes, that's because of the embedded metals
right
in the Earth crust. Mm-hmm. So the water, whenever the Earth gets tipped backwards, the water follows gravity, the law of gravity, but the crust follows the metals that are embedded inside. So it's not the gravitational effect that tips the Earth backwards, turns us around at all. It's the magnetic effect.
Right.
The Earth is a giant magnet. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm afraid of. So I came to Florida from Arkansas from my safe zone location in December because, well, I knew we were on the wrong side of the solar system. I know where this thing is. I know where it's going to perihelion. But now we are going towards the section of space where this thing is going to cross. And this is the dangerous time. This could be the most dangerous time in the timeline coming up. So all I'm saying is be watchful. I'm not looking for all the signs to happen before I'm acting. I am going to my safe zone location. May the 17th is my crap hit the fan scenario date. I believe everybody should be a survivalist.
Right.
You know, society's trying to collapse. The support mechanism is going to fail. The power grids, eventually we get, you guys, or was it the prior show, talking about electromagnetic pulses? Eventually we're going to get it, and the power grid is not going to come back up. Mad Max is going to end up happening
right.
for one reason or another, whether the banksters decide to raid our bank accounts
right.
or the World War III starts
exactly.
and
this,
mayhem
right.
starts. Okay, we've seen examples of Chile. We've seen examples of societies collapsing and what happens. So the survivalists, those are the people that make it through, the people that anticipate. They look at the threat. They look at what's coming down the road. They create the contingency plans to neutralize those threats, and they execute them on time. So that's, in my mind, there are three kinds of people. People that make things happen, people that let things happen, and people that say, what happened? So just sitting there not doing anything is acknowledging that, well, I'm a person that's just going to let it happen, and whatever happens, happens. You know, if that's the way you want to do it, then I understand that perfectly. My mother was that way.
Right.
You know, she's 73 years old.
Aww.
Well, she was. But, you know, if something's going to happen, she had to have her medicine every month. She could not look towards a survival scenario. My father can't either.
That would be tough.
So,
yeah.
Once you get up a certain amount in age, and you have frailties, you need medication, you know, you can forget about all that stuff. So there's talked to a lot of people in that situation. But me, I'm not ready to go out like that.
Definitely
I'm a survivalist,
not.
Hardcore mm-hmm. survivalist. You know, I've got my guns, I've got my ammo. got food supply for more than a year. Power, we've got power supply, giant tanks, propane, giant generators. We're anticipating a 3 to 4 month break in the power supply. We're supplied by a nuclear power plant on a stable plate there in the Ozarks. So we've got a plan, and what I believe we should be doing is the best we can and let God do the rest.
Right.
So that's my strategy. I prepare myself physically, and I prepare myself spiritually. Yeah, mentally.
Right.
But I'm also prepared for the rapture. No, but and we can talk about that if you want to. But what I believe, because my Bible work and this science work intersect in 1 Thessalonians 5, start at verse 1. They're going to say peace and safety, because all this DEFCON 2, DEFCON 3, Korea stuff. Notice it started with a meeting over there in Korea. Now the people put out over there, it's because they've gone to the next level of a global program. They know this thing's coming. There's going to be an event off the coast of Korea. Watch and see, just like Fukushima. There's going to be an event.
So you think this is more like a distraction?
Well, it's a puppet show.
Right.
And the puppeteers are getting ready to go to their underground arc cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're surrounded by sleepers, what I call sleepers.
Okay.
This isn't Manchurian Candidate kind of sleepers. These are people like the Navy commanders that were sent that ran right into Navy command, into the strong room to be murdered by submunition bomblet number 2.
Right.
So the National Guard, our militaries around the world, they're sleepers. They don't know what's happening, but they have to be
aware and on guard. They have to be on call to know.
First of all, they have to be conditioned. Then mentally, the earth changes are happening all around them, but they're being conditioned so that they're like oblivious to it. Then they have to be trained for what's about to happen. You're seeing the war gaming that's going on. It's increasing around the world. Like the New Madrid exercise, over 1 million people. They're doing that all around the planet. But it's not for the people going to the underground Ark City programs. It's for the sleepers that are being deployed.
For the sleepers that are being deployed, right.
The harm's way.
That
so you
sense.
Have to stage events like Korea in order to train these sleepers to run out in front of a train. Though the military or the police in the United States, for example, sleepers, they don't know what's about to happen.
Nope.
They're being given 2 billion bullets, tanks, protective armor. They're being militarized. Your police right now is being militarized.
Of course.
Why?
They've been training with
the police. It's not so they can come after you.
Yeah.
It's because they need to feel secure. They've got to have security, feel like that they are invulnerable, like the Navy commanders going into the strong room. They're secure. It's false security, though. The billion bullets is not going to do them any good when the Dark Star gets here.
No,
the other guy got to run to the underground Ark City, but you guys take care of it.
Right.
That's what's going on a global stage.
Yep.
So you got to get the elements of the military of the United States out of the United States, because when the crap hits the fan, they're going to be here to help us.
Right.
So you can't do that. You got to have some big event, and that's what's about to happen with Korea. And then the United States, well, we got to deploy now. Whenever you see that deployment coming, your big event's going to be coming.
Okay.
So to me, like, this is not just going to be a local event anymore if it gets close to May the 17th. We're talking about something that's global. Now, the encouraging for me is the fact they're sending the Harp arrays, because that makes me think that it's going to be local to Korea, like Fukushima, like Chile. That's when they set up. Whenever they send that HAARP stuff out there, they're creating an amplification wave for a local event. So that makes me hopeful that it's not going to be a global event. See what I mean? But
it's going to be right.
Discouraged by the science, by the data that's coming in with what's going on with the sun, what's going on with the fact that I haven't had my big event yet, knowing that if the we're crossed between the two stars, we have to have an event.
It's 1965.
And the fact that it hasn't happened yet tells me that this thing is farther left, which means that it's picked up speed, which means that it's reaching perihelion, which means it's already here. All right? It's just I can't put my hand out there and tell you exactly where it is yet, and that's kind of scary, but that's what Scripture says.
Well, because you can't even see it yet.
The day of the Lord comes like a
life
thief.
Force. Yeah.
The day of the Lord's coming like a thief in the night. It explains why I can't see the darn thing. So I don't think Noah saw it. I don't think Moses saw it. I don't think the prophet of Acts, that's in Acts 3, 22 and 23, I don't think he sees it either.
Right.
Christ only describes the effects of the sun turning dark and the and the moon turning red and the earthquakes and the tsunamis around the world that are scaring men so they're dying.
Right.
They're not describing the black star because they can't see it either.
Because they can't see it. They don't know what it is. Well, let me ask you this also. Do you remember, did you hear the John Moore show back in, I think it was last year in July. I think it was July where John Moore discusses the military briefing with the military and their families. And before the briefing, the families had to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that nothing would be disclosed, you know, from this meeting. And they didn't even tell them what it was yet. John Moore goes on to say that his source told him that it was Planet Nibiru that was supposed to be coming and that these military personnel, along with their families, would be given a couple of weeks' notice to kind of, you know, bug
NASA
out.
NASA gave two warnings in 2011
mm-hmm.
to
oh, you
prepare
saw that.
For
yeah.
unforeseen. Yeah, it was like a 2-minute, 45-second
yes,
warning on the
I've
first.
Yes, I've seen it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, well, I have to admit that I have not listened to John Moore. Much of the information that comes out of there, a lot of it's disinformation. So it's the problem with scripture, interpreting scripture, is all of the misinterpretations, the disinformation.
Right.
9/11, there's more, you have to wade through more disinformation than information to figure out what's information. That's
right.
What made it difficult. This, what's going on right now, Project Black Star, is what's happening. This is, when you understand Project Black Star, then that's a master key to understand what's going on economically, politically, militarily. You can understand everything by putting on those glasses and looking through there.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I did want to mention something about that, and I do have a caller that I'm going to pick up after this. But I had taken photos, and I can share them with you, maybe about 2 months ago, and I had taken a photo of the sun, and my fiance actually had seen. I didn't even see it. I was taking pictures of the chemtrails around the sun, and that's what I was kind of, you know, focusing on, nothing around the sun. And he had noticed, he's like, hey, there's something on the upper right-hand side that you need to check out. So I took it with my phone and my camera, the camera in my phone, and what I did was I uploaded it to my computer so I can analyze it. I have that. I can send it to you. Then last week, it happened so fast I couldn't even take a picture of it because we were driving and then we went behind the clouds so I couldn't see it. Then it went behind the clouds, couldn't see anything. But I looked up and my fiance was driving. We were in the car. We looked up and we had seen the sun with another bright light source in front, like literally in front of the sun. And we were astonished of what we saw. And we were like, oh my God. And by the time I was able to take a photo of it, it went behind the clouds, and I couldn't even take a photo of it where we were positioned. It was like maybe for a split, like maybe 5 seconds we had seen this before, you know, because we were in motion. But I really wish I could have taken a photo of this. I haven't seen anything like this. And this was, like I said, my first sighting was a few months ago when, like I said, he had actually seen what's in the photo. And again, I can email and share that with you. But I wasn't able to take a photo I tried to, but I couldn't take a successful photo of what we had seen. So right now it looks like here, from where I am in the East Coast, it looks like it was in front. So when you're saying about the, you know, when we pass it or when it passes through, that may be that's why you're right, I think, maybe getting close, because now it has actually, its position has moved.
Well, but I get a lot of these pictures.
Right, I know you do.
People see my YouTube, they want a little bit of analysis on it, seen lots of these pictures. And most of them are sun dogs, solar flares.
Right.
Lens flares. Generally, what you saw was with your naked eye, but it's extremely difficult.
Exactly, and that's
extremely,
why I question it.
It's very easy to fake anything that's on a picture.
Right.
So photographic data is generally very unreliable.
Exactly.
Something like that. So even if you get something authentic, then it's going to be considered unreliable. But there's a lot of people, there's a lot of strange things happening, and there's a lot of people looking at the sun
right
now. If there's a true phenomenon that's going on out there, I think a lot of people are going to get pictures of it, kind of videos of it and things like that.
Once it gets closer, yeah.
And if you're talking about a star-like object near the sun, the gravitational effect is going to cause the flares coming from the sun. Just
right.
A comet near the sun causes flares, asteroids. Cause flares that some of them actually shoot out and hit the comet or the asteroid because that object has a gravitational and magnetic relationship with the sun. Now, this is the sun's protective mechanism, and it causes some objects that are going to crash into the sun to have an orbit,
right,
to actually be pushed away so that they start having an orbit. So there's a lot of different things that it could possibly be.
And you know what, also, exactly.
Can I talk a little bit on that?
Right, yeah. Well, the reason why I was taking a picture of the sun, because it appears here and in other locations from other states that people share with me, they are spraying chemtrails around the sun. They're spraying it at sunrise. Then in the middle of the day, they're spraying it where the sun's going to be in position, and then also at sunset. And as you know, with the chemtrails, they dissipate and they look like clouds. Well, to most people, or the average person that, you know, is not, doesn't know anything about this, oh, that's just a cloud, you know. But to people who know, that's not a cloud. So
right.
The thing is, I know, and my feeling is they're hiding something, because why is it they're spraying around the sun?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always around the sun. So my theory is that they're hiding something. If it was, you know, they're just spraying chemicals to kill people, why is it only around the sun?
Yeah, let me speak to that, because I'm working with astronomers. My lead astronomer, Don, has his own observatory and infrared equipment, and he can't see it.
Right.
We know the sector of space, and we know we can't see it.
Right.
You're not going to see it with a cell phone or with your naked eye or anything like that.
Right, exactly.
Okay? But what the chemtrails, what they're doing with that is they're spraying you with nanotechnology. They want you to breathe it. They're upgrading all the time. As they're breaking the 5-nanometer barrier, they're breaking closer, they're giving new components, and then those components are finding the acid environment of your stomach, and they're growing filaments. And so what they're doing is they're going to control the population after the New World Order starts.
Right.
New World Order starts after Black Star passes through. And their plan is to terraform the planet. That's what Black Star is going to do. And then they're going to start the Guidestone scenario. That's 500 million people. And how are you going to control them?
Right.
You're going to control them using the nanotechnologies and the new HARP arrays that they are just now put in place around the equator in the safe zones, and the new infrastructure that they're building out in space, actually. 325 HARP facilities now around the world, up from 240. So you said you had a caller, and I see you only have 5 minutes if you want to get them in here.
Yeah, I'm going to bring them in there. I'm going to bring them in here right now with us. Yeah, I wanted to actually cover that. Okay, caller, you're on the line. Hello, caller, you're on the line. Okay, I'm going to place them back on hold. They'll raise their hand again. So is my theory correct about the chemtrails? Are they doing it to hide something around the sun and also as a depopulation tactic, or is it just for a depopulation tactic? Because, again, it's around the sun. So
right.
That's why I'm saying they're trying to...
I think it appears to be that way. The chemtrailing project has been going on for decades as part of Rothschild, Rockefeller, Gates eugenics.
Right.
So this is... That was going to happen anyway. It's already been financed by the richest guy in the world. He has more money than anybody.
Right.
This is part of his long-term program of spraying us. Lots of things going on with chemtrailing. We could do just one show on that. This is what allows artificial intelligence to manipulate the nanites that are inside of you. That's what HARP is. Chemtrailing and HARP are connected. Artificial intelligence, all connected.
Exactly.
They're reverse engineering what they're learning from simulations. They're running millions of simulations. Do they have real-world simulations with information about you and me? Or we're doing a live show right now in their simulation. They have stable ones where there are known values. That is mutating algorithms that they know the formula for you and for me. It's like a chemical compound to the supercomputer. And once they identify what that is, they know what you're going to have for breakfast in the morning. They can build predictive modeling that goes out into the future and create event horizon way into the future. So they have stable environments. They only put what they know, knowns, in there. And then they have the periphery ones. And that's for crazy people like me and you.
Right.
Because they can't figure us out. We're anomalies. Right. We're enigmas.
No, exactly.
Until they can figure us out. And then they'll dump us in with the known values, you know, if you saw the movie The 13th Floor, that was a 1927. That's what they're doing with their sims that they're running. And they're trying to get that event horizon out as far in the future, and that's how they're doing threat assessment. They know who to get rid of by who creates the problem for them in the future. That's who wakes up their sleepers, and Lone Wolf. Lone Wolf is number one priority of what they're trying to find. That's the reason they're running the Sims out there. It only takes one Rambo to destroy the underground Ark City. They're trying to identify him and remove him as the threat neutralization. And what they did is they gave artificial intelligence the command position, and that's the problem right there. There's artificial intelligence has been doing contingency planning for them since the 1970s. But then they realized that's the reason they have Facebook. That's the reason the CIA and Facebook are the same thing.
Exactly.
That they're gathering all the data, not for humans. They're doing it for artificial intelligence so that they can build databases, they can build hosts, real-world threat assessments, what they're doing. That's what the whole deal is about. And I see that we're running out of time. Carol03.com. And if you become a newsletter subscriber, you have access to this kind of information that I'm sharing with Valerie right now. Then you have my email address. I can talk with you on Skype, help you with threat assessment and things like that. If you just want the links, to become a full-fledged, just any donation, and I'll send you all of the Dropbox folder information. Thank you very much, Valerie, for having me.
No, Terrell, thank you so much for coming on. You're always, taking out your time to come on here every Saturday. I know the last couple of Saturdays I wasn't here, and then last Saturday my painkillers kind of knocked me out and I fell asleep. But like I said, we have only a little bit of time left, maybe 20 seconds. So I do have someone in chat who wants to know more about Comet Icen. I'm not sure if you know much about Comet Icen,
yes,
but I'll do a little more research. Maybe we can discuss that next week.
Okay, it has a 62-degree declination, inclination to the plane. It is a comet.
Okay.
It's not falling in a pattern of seismicity. It's November 28th, perihelion, and it's going to cross our orbit around Christmas.
Okay, excellent. I really appreciate that. All right, everyone, so have a wonderful evening. Terrell, we'll be in touch, and I'll talk to you during the week, and we'll see you also next Saturday.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.